two things about me, I think, that are significant. One is I am a pastor, and I'll be coming to you from that platform. I've been a pastor for 41 years, I guess, in different roles. The first half of that, I was a youth pastor, assistant pastor, whatever the title was at the time, in two different churches, working with four different senior pastors. Then I moved to, 21 years ago, moved to the church I now serve. When I came to that church where I'm currently at, that was at that point the smallest church I'd been a part of, and came from a larger ministry to a much smaller one. And since then, we have grown a bit, and I'm grateful for that. But I have a pastor's heart, and that means that I have spent a lot of time with people through the years. I don't think I've met with anybody who has committed murder, but all the rest. And at times I have had counselors that I can lean on and invite people to talk to. And other times in our ministry, I have not had that. And so it's me. It's me or nobody. I remember getting that harsh reality early on when I was dealing with very young. I was in my 20s and in a certain situation where it was just me. And there was a very difficult family situation. I'll just not give details, but the stuff that as a 23-year-old, I thought, do people do this? You know, I've never seen this before. I did not know people hurt each other like that in families. And I tried to refer, and you need somebody beyond, and it was me or nothing. And so I had to figure out something about how to help people in ugliness that I had not seen. Things that you people deal with, I'm sure, on a more regular basis. So I'm a pastor. I'm also a husband. My wife and I will celebrate our 40th anniversary this summer. I am a father, three daughters, two by birth, and one who joined us at age 16. Yes, there's a story, okay? But my three girls. My wife and I went from no grandkids to five in 3 years. So all our grandchildren are close enough to be with, and they are all three and under. So three boys, two little girls. So when they come over, my house is full of toys and activity and diapers, and then they take them away, and it's suddenly quiet. You go, man, what just happened? But I love being a pastor. Not everyone does. There are times it's very hard. There are times it's harder than I thought. There are times that I've thought, oh, Lord, could I just do something else? But I have the scars for 40 years, the pieces of flesh I've handed off, the sadness and disappointment, I have those. Those are some details about me that I think you'll see and hear as we go along. I would like to think with you about this. I'd like to talk about experiences of grief. You know, for me then, I was introduced to grief care ministry kind of out of the blue. I was very young. I was discipled into ministry. I became an intern, a pastoral intern, when I was 17. I had just graduated high school at 17 and then became an intern for 2 years and then hired as a youth pastor when I was 19. So that's been my whole life. Some other side jobs along the way due to financial necessity, but that's been my life. When I was in those early years, the pastor I was working with was going to go on vacation, and it was going to be me handling things for a week or two, whatever it was. And everybody seemed well in the congregation, but in his study, he said, hey, just in case, here are my books about funerals. You'll probably be fine. And I was thinking, yeah, everybody stay healthy, stay well, and here are my books on funerals. And if you open it up, here's a few outlines of things I've done. But you probably won't need those. And anyway, see ya. Well, a few days later, I got the call from a person who was not in our church, but nevertheless that I knew, who said, my neighbor just died, and they don't have any kind of pastoral care. Can you come? And I thought, yes, of course. And so I went as a very young man, wondering what in the world I was doing. But I went to a trailer, very humble setting, And I met Ed. I still remember their names, Ed and Jeanette. Jeanette had died. They lived in a little place. There was no phone. This was before cell phones. So when she landed on the floor and he knew something terrible has happened, he tried to care for older people. He tried to do some kind of CPR the best he could, but he knew the phone was at the neighbor's house, the closest phone, and he knew he couldn't keep this up. So he was, again, feeble, and he went down the road knowing that that was going to be it, but he had no choice. We went down and called 911. That's the number for help at where we're at, and they came, and sure enough, it was too late. His wife had died, Jeanette Barrett. And then, you know, they came and took her, and here he was. So I got over there that afternoon. It had been just a few hours since they had taken his wife away, and I had my first real experience of that moment. Harsh, deep loss, many years of marriage, and what do I do? And so I didn't really know. So I sat with him for hours. And I listened to him talk about wonderful memories. He would smile at times. And then he'd, you know how it is. And he'd, oh, and I've lost her. And he would weep. And I sat with him and cared for him as best I knew. And then went back several times, finally planned a funeral. My first funeral ever. I was scared to death. And had that moment, of walking into the funeral home. Had not done that before, really. And going down there to where the pastor's supposed to sit. Like, oh my goodness sakes, that's me today. And I did. And I heard this older lady, no really, stage whisper, in somewhere close to the front. Is that the pastor? I thought, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing? And yes, I did the funeral for Jeanette Barrett. And did my best. And spoke of Jesus and care. And then we walked together, and Ed, Mr. Barrett, took my hand as we walked, led the procession down to where she was to be buried. I know exactly where it was. And there I said a few words, and Miss Jeanette was buried. Now, since then, 40 bunch of years later, I have walked with many others, older, to the grave. I have held babies who have died. And I have wept with their parents. I have walked with young couples who have known grief and have hurt one another in terrible ways and wonder if there's a tomorrow. People who are dying of cancer. It is such a privilege when they let you in to their story and their grief. I hope that in all of our professionality, that we never lose the privilege it is when people say, would you walk alongside me? And it is that. Oh, thank you so much for letting me share your grief. Well, I can't think of too many circumstances that I have not had the privilege of caring for, and all of them leave a mark on my soul. Today, I could list, oh my goodness, now there are dozens and dozens down through the years, but certain ones rise to the top, and I could tell you their story. Because I walked with their family and walked with them in what was going to be the last year of their life. And they reached out to me as their pastor to say, I've been diagnosed with this, and I don't know what this is going to look like. And I will say, well, I would love to walk with you as far as we can. I'll walk with you. And who's your family? And how can we care? So, my goodness, experiences of grief. But I want to, before going into some other topics, I want to start with the Word of God. And there are so many places we could go to, but I have just chosen these to set the stage and maybe help with a couple of stories as they come to mind here. But I know you know this. I know this is your conviction, or else you wouldn't be here. But the Bible addresses every emotion, every place in life, and especially as we think about it today, the Bible addresses grief, loss, and pain. It does. God's Word speaks to us here. So I just want to read a few of these. Psalm 34, I'm going to read starting at verse 15. The eyes of the Lord are, you hear this? Toward the righteous. His ears toward their cry. Another version, his ears attend to their prayer. I love that. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their sorrows, their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit. I move to Psalm 56. I won't read the entire text in most of these cases, but just some excerpts. You could fill in your own favorite texts, I know. Psalm 56, verses that we read often with hurting people. Verse 8, you have kept count of my wanderings or my tossings. You've put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? Isn't that good? God who comes close enough to be near us in our tears, who doesn't tell us, hey, okay, stop it. Dry those tears. Come on, man up here. No, no, that's not it. This I know, verse 9, this I know that God is for me. God is for me. He is. John 11, which of us have not used John 11 as a key text? And I use John 11 a lot in as I speak to people at funerals, because I believe it captures some of the cries of our heart and some of the questions about the nearness of God or his perceived absence. You're familiar with the story. I won't tell all of it, but this is Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And I am all regularly struck by Martha and Mary's statement. I say to people often, do you hear their question? There's an implied question here that it's the same in John 11, 21 and verse 32. Both of the sisters, in turn, after the death of their brother, say to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. What's the question? Why weren't you here? Why weren't you here, God? Where were you? Now, of course, if you remember the way the story begins, when Jesus heard that Lazarus was sick, it says, he waited. He stayed two more days. What do you mean, where were you? Well, he could have come earlier. And he didn't. Wow. Yes, I remember one of the more profound, emotionally palpable services that I was a part of where this was my text. Sean and Lindsay, young couple, coming back from a camping trip. Their young son, 4 years old, two friends, left camping early to try. They had to go to work, so they left in the dark early, got up driving. Somewhere on the mountain road, Sean, who was driving, apparently fell asleep, hit a bridge abutment, single car accident, rolled. Dad's driving, mom's behind him. The way the car turned, both mom and dad were killed. Their four-year-old son was there. Grandma and grandpa dealing with questions like, Grandma, why didn't my mommy answer me after the accident? And then he asked a number of other graphic questions about why did she look the way she did? Why was there blood coming out of her ears? How do you answer a four-year-old these things? And so this was the text. And I said to the crowd, do you hear the question? God, where were you? Where were you? They're never rebuked. Jesus never rebukes them for their question. He tells who he is. He takes them to the grave. He enters their suffering, but he never says, where's your faith? Come on, stop it already. He doesn't. And so I said to that crowd, today, many of us are asking, God, where were you on that mountain road? I mean, come on. Come on. Where were you that day? Implication? You should have been there. You should have stopped this terrible suffering. Now, you have people, you have faces in your mind. You would ask the same question, Lord, where were you? Where were you? How come We'll talk more about that. Hebrews 2. Hebrews 2. The book of Hebrews, of course, the story, it's about Jesus. It's about Christ, the beauty of Christ and all of his offices as prophet, priest, and king, his nearness to us in our humanity. And one of those places where we see the humanity of Christ is this text, where we read, "Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is, the devil," and look at this, "and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery." Fear of death. Wow. You see any food here for counseling? "Who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery." Wow. He had to be made like his brothers, verse 17, "so that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation," satisfaction, "for the sins of his people. For because he himself has suffered when tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted." And then, of course, chapter 4, 14 to 16, verses I hope you know so well. "Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses." Okay, stop for a second. Isn't that amazing? The sympathy of Christ in our weakness, our weaknesses, rather than it doesn't say his judgment. He's able to judge us in our weaknesses. He is able to sympathize with our weaknesses. "One who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin." And let us then, the conclusion, let us then come with confidence. Let us draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need. I am with you, have run many times to God for his help for me. There have been moments when I especially knew I needed God's help. Again, in my younger years, one of those teaching times, this wasn't about death. This is about some of those other things that happen. And again, for recording and so on, there's things you don't talk about. But I had found myself in a difficult situation, family, some things had come out. That day there was going to be an arrest. And indeed there was. And I was at the courthouse when the police brought a certain person in. And the grief of the day, what a day it had been. I'd been there in the morning to say, we need to talk. Here are some things. And this isn't okay. And then the police and all. And that night, think about this. That night, there was a party I was supposed to go to. It was about an hour away. And I finished at the courthouse at 5. And the party started at 6. And I knew I couldn't walk in covered with tears. I knew I needed in an hour to shift. Anybody identify with that? Oh, where you can't walk in and be, you know, you have to walk in faith and say, God, I need to set this aside. And this is an hour of rejoicing. I need to enter your birthday party and be all here. And I'm supposed to lead some stuff. So I've got to come and lead. And oh Lord, I'm out. I'm out of gas. And God met me as he has met you in times of sorrow to say, help me here. Now, there are three things I want to comment on here. And you see these, of course. And I just want to talk through these. I do have voice problems, so you'll see me drinking a lot. I'll probably drink that whole pitcher of water. We'll see, but it kind of keeps me going. But this first one, I think, is so critical. Before we can think about helping others, we need to think about processing grief ourselves and how we do it. If we are going to be long-termers in any kind of counseling ministry or ministry that involves the emotions and care of people, we have to handle our own grief and sorrow that at times can be every bit as real as if it were you suffering that event. If you are a person who God has gifted with a compassionate heart, learning to process grief ourselves. When you fly in an airplane, remember the moment when they did that little speech that nobody listens to anymore? You know, in the case of loss of cabin pressure, the compartment up here will draw open and mask will drop out. What do they say next? Put it on you first before you help them. And they always show a picture of a parent and a child. And right away you think, well, come on, you're supposed to take care of your kid. And there's a reason why they're saying that. Because if you don't get yours on in time and you conk out, you're not helping the kid at all. So, wow, that's difficult. That's what this one is about, is the reminder to every one of us that we need to process grief ourselves. And I'm interested for you to think here about how you do that. You, how do you do that? With the personality God has given you and the setting you're in, how do you do this? And if you say, I don't know, you might be on a path to not being in a good place. As I have here in front of you, many times we think about grief the most when it involves the death of someone close to us. And that's good. That's correct. Certainly that involves grief. But as you know, the grief process comes to us not only because of death. There are many other elements that trigger the grief process. I think it's the same process of saying goodbye to what I treasured and what the way it was. And recognizing the loss and feeling the loss, and then coming to a place of saying, okay, it's not going to be like that again, and coming out the other side. I believe that for many people, the time during COVID was a grief process. Life used to be safe. Life used to be okay. People used to this. And now it's this way, and I don't know if it'll ever be the same again. And I think it was grief. And sometimes, of course, that manifests itself, you know, as anger and all kinds of other things. Some certainly in denial. There's no problem here. Well, Houston, there is. There's a problem. I think certainly some of the elements that we're seeing now in Ukraine, there's plenty of death to be concerned about. But displacement, all those people, every one of them is grieving. Every one of them. Not just those who've seen death of a loved one. Every one of them is in the process of grief. What just happened? I lost what I loved. It was safe. It was my home. It was my stuff. It was my dog. It was home, and it was okay. And it will never be that same way again. It may be okay, but it'll never be the same again. And that grief process is, you know, putting together the pieces of our hearts again when we realize it will never quite be the same again. This is true in loss through divorce, separation, financial devastation. To be familiar with the grief process, I think, is so helpful because you begin to see it in other places. Sometimes when people hurt each other and a person's on the victim side, in addition to anger and all kinds of other things, part of it is grief. I didn't know that person could hurt me like that. I had this vision of a safe world and a safe home and a safe spouse, and it's not that way. And so it's a grief process. It really is. So grief is a process. You know this. Grief is a process, not an event. You don't just say, okay, I'm going to grieve tomorrow, and the next day I'll be fine. Oh, really? Man, if you're able to do that, I'd like some of that juice. I don't know how that works. It's a process. And for some people, it takes longer than others. You know this as well. Grief does not take place according to any particular timetable. Some people, we say, are in a different place 6 months out than others. There are folks in our church who have been who grieve shorter and more powerfully, and others who grieve longer and slower. Some who visit grief and then ignore it for a while, and then visit it again, and then ignore it for a while. We have a grief share ministry. I don't know if some of you are familiar with grief share. It's like a 12-step program around grief. And I have a couple who leads that, both of whom have lost their spouses, and they were my friends. I might talk about them. And then several years later, they got married. But they know some things about grief and loss. They are the right people to lead this ministry. Because each of them can say, where you are walking, I have walked. And your tears, I know something of. But we grieve deeply. Grief is a process, certainly. Now, I need you to think about this from my life as a pastor, and I bet it applies to you as well. In many respects, grief is a lifelong companion. This side of heaven, we're never truly done grieving. And I that has been a hard lesson for me. I don't think I went into pastoral ministry knowing that. For all the joys and wonderful things about being a pastor, it's a longer journey of grief, a longer constant journey of grief than most people realize. Paul says, of course, 2 Corinthians 4, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. Those two can come together. You can rejoice and sorrow. But I have found that to be true of my life. I find myself never far away from grief, not only death, but counseling situations, again, as we've described, where people hurt each other. People are, you know, I remember a conversation I was in where a person said, can I trust you with some things? And of course, I put some parameters on that and said, but in those parameters, you know, if you're going to tell me that you robbed six banks or committed some other illegal act, we might want to talk about that. But if you're talking about other things that aren't in those categories, yes. And then I learned some things. As that person pulled out of things, opened a door of their life and their heart that they had not opened ever before. And I saw the pain and the difficulty and thought, oh, Lord Jesus, only you can heal. Only you can heal. But the grief of that, as I have here under letter C, we absorb counselors, pastors. You may not think this is true of you, but it is. We are like sponges on some different levels, I realize, but we absorb the grief of those we care for. I suspect that you know what I'm talking about. Years ago, a church in Vancouver, before the place I currently serve, we had a counselor on our staff. He was just finishing up his PsyD. And I remember he could meet with people all day and walk down the hall whistling. I remember asking him, how in the world do you do? By the way, what's wrong with you? What is wrong? I know some of what walked into that room. And you're whistling. And he was just, anyway, it was a good question. And he said, well, you know, fortunately, I cared passionately about every one of those, but I'm having to work to learn how to whistle on the way home. So that when I get home, my wife and my sons have a husband and a father. Because otherwise, I will go home and sit in the corner and rock back and forth like I feel like doing. Interesting, whistle. We who care well for others, we enter their world of sadness and we help carry the load. And I'm telling you things I know you know. Grief is hard work. It is emotionally exhausting. It can leave you spiritually drained. A lot of pastors quit during COVID. Did you know that? A lot of counselors were overloaded. In the church now, we've grown from some of our earlier beginnings. I have several counselors in the church. One of them, again, PsyD. I asked him at one point, how's your practice? How's it going? He said, well, here's how it is, middle of pandemic. If you call our office for an intake, I have a four-month waiting list. So if it's January and you're thinking suicidal thoughts, I hope you make it to April because that's the earliest I'll see you. Oh, wow. A person involved in our life, my wife and mine, called us late one night and we had some conversations and she was working through a number of things. And she called late at night, I think 11:30, later than my phone usually rings. And what she was calling about was she was feeling desperately suicidal. And so she called a suicide hotline. Right? That seemed like a reasonable thought, right? Call a suicide hotline. She did. She got somebody on the other end who heard her story and said, I have a counselor who will talk to you. Can you call back in 2 hours? Well, for a young lady who has a knife in her hand, 2 hours, what is that? Well, they're that busy. Well, I'm glad she called me. We spent an hour on the phone and worked through what's going on and how is this going to be and who can. Anyway, I did not, it was a long night. But I made sure she was not alone, which involves a lot of things. I won't hang up until I know you're with somebody. Who would you like that to be? Me knocking on your family's door at midnight? Or would you like that to be Mr. Brown, the cop? Because I'll send him so fast it'll make your head spin. Or will it be your folks, your parents? Who would you like to talk to? Those are your three choices. So anyway, but I take a moment here. I remember learning this, that in order for me to be okay, I had to care for my own heart. So I have to know myself enough to know how to do that. And there have been times that I have been involved in so many elements of grief that I need to cry. I do. Not because it's going to fix anything, but it's my heart. I'm sharing their sorrow. It wasn't me. I didn't go through that. But I feel it. I remember really being caught off guard once. I was driving and just this sense of sadness. I thought, everything's good in my life. What is this? This weird emotion. Come on, Jay, be healthy. I mean, stop it. And then I begin to think, oh, that's right, this and this and this. And I gave myself permission to grieve. I hadn't thought about that. I thought I was going to go have lunch. But I was late because I needed to just take a few minutes to grieve. I didn't see it coming. I realize that not all of you are in a pastoral setting or pastors. So you'll have to hear me talk about this and translate it into your setting, okay? But ministry leaders, I'm saying, can prepare the people they serve for seasons of grief and loss. And I think that's one of our jobs. Because we try to prepare our folks for all kinds of things, welcoming new people or adding classes and building buildings. And I think it's just as important, maybe more so, that we prepare our folks for seasons of grief and loss. Sometimes by that I mean specific ones because you see them coming. And in general, as we train our congregations through our preaching and our teaching and other areas of leadership, for them to understand how to face grief, loss, and just self-care and caring for people. So here are some of my affirmations that I think you would all agree with. I absolutely believe that we should preach and teach the joy of the Lord is our strength, and that we should serve the Lord with gladness. Absolutely, 100%. I believe there's joy in serving Jesus. I learned that song when I was young. But I also think it's important that we acknowledge for our folks that grieving is not lack of faith. That makes sense? Sometimes I fear in our, come on everybody, here we go. We can make it very difficult for those who are grieving to be present. I was reminded of that some years ago when I got a call. This 25 years ago, but I remember some of these details. A guy who called and he asked about the church and how we worship together. And he said, I've been attending a church where everything, and bless them all, everything is upbeat. Everything. Everything is, God is good. Amen. And I am so sad. And there's no place in the life of that congregation for me to be sad. And I didn't come to church to have somebody say, come on, brother, cheer up. No. And I don't know what to do about this. We talked for quite a while about grief and loss. But I resonated with his concern. Do we in our ministries have space that acknowledges those who are grieving? That can look very different. depending on your circumstances. One of the things we've done that's just very seasonal, I don't know if you've heard of a Blue Christmas service. You heard of this? Okay, I heard this some other place, so it wasn't original with me. But at Christmas time, we do other celebration activities and so on. But we do a Friday night Blue Christmas. We advertise it through our Grief Share ministry as a quiet, reflective night for people who are grieving. And it's candlelit, and there's no pressure. We don't say, please stand up and sing. We don't stand up and sing. We do Christmas songs that are more on the mellow side, reflective. Nobody stands up front to lead them. I have all the people leading them seated in the front row by the piano. And so I get up at the beginning of that and I say, here's the purpose of the night. You came for a reason. This last Christmas, I mean, usually small, 30 people or less, a young couple came who just lost a baby. And I didn't know that. I just knew they were very sad. You could see it. But afterwards, as we talked a bit, somebody came to me and said, do you remember I sent this prayer request in? These are so-and-so and so-and-so. And then I remembered, oh, I'd never met them. Their baby just died. And they've come tonight. So we sing. I explain tonight, you're safe here. As the piano plays and music is sung, you can either sing or not as you wish. Tonight, many of you will be captured by thoughts of memories, Christmases gone by, hopes that will not be fulfilled, things you've lost, people you've lost. So it's okay tonight to sit and cry. It's okay to sing. And so we sing. And then there's a moment we have a table set up with little candles. And I have a mic and I make an invitation and say, the piano's going to play quietly. If you'd like to come up front and light a candle in memory of someone and just go sit down, you can do that. Or if you'd like to say, I'm lighting this candle in memory of, you can. And we give about 10 minutes, a piano player plays, and I'm there to say, somebody's coming up, and then she'll stop, and they'll say something. Then after that part is done, we'll do a couple more songs, then I step up, and I talk for about 10 minutes about some element here about the nearness and kindness of God. His nearness to us in our grief, how he longs for you, whoever you are, whatever your faith background. People come who do not, followers of Jesus, people come from the community. Wherever you're at when you're understanding of God, please know the compassion of God for your loss tonight. And a couple more songs. Then I have our Grief Share leaders come up and say, we're this couple, and each Sunday afternoon or whenever that class is, we meet and we care for people who are sad. If you'd like to join us, you can anytime. There's no cost. And we close the night. There's cookies available if people want. Some people make, you know, a beeline for the exit. No problem. I've had some people sit outside, not sure they want to come in. But to enter into grief is powerful. And so anyway, we do that. We've done that like 5 or 6 years in a row now, and we're just going to keep doing it. We live stream it, and people join us online because you see their comments. One time it was my nieces and nephews. Uncle Jay, thank you. Not people of faith, because I had cared for my sister in her death and their family. None of them followers of Jesus. And I was the only family member my sister would talk to. So I was there and met her, cared for her kids. Wow, I tell you what, I saw that feed and thought, oh Lord, help me here. Uncle Jay, thank you. Wow. So yes, we teach and preach that the joy of the Lord is our strength, but grieving, you know this, grieving is not lack of faith. We, for a Christian to grieve, we grieve in hope. Yes, we do. We don't grieve as those with no hope, but we grieve. We do. Now, there's a lot to be taught here about human emotions. I believe that. I believe that as ministry leaders, we should teach people about what to do with emotions. It's part of image of God. We've done seminars in our church on things like forgiveness. Man, are those powerful. What do you do? Saturday seminar, we're going to talk about forgiveness. Here's a book I want you to read ahead of time. And then we're going to come and for about 6 hours, we're going to work through issues of forgiveness on the level that you're okay with. We're going to talk about this as a church community. Wow. But we've done Sunday school classes talking about how the Psalms express image of God in the depth of emotion. Lament. Half the songs, Psalms, are songs of lament. Sometimes corporate lament, sometimes personal lament. But the Psalms are intensely grief-oriented. My goodness sakes, Lamentations. What is this? It's a lament. Hope in the middle. Yes, we go quickly to Lamentations 3, don't we? The best-known text in Lamentations. The part in the middle where, you know, this I recall to mind, therefore I have hope. The Lord's loving kindness never ceases. It's new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Those wonderful texts, but what about the other parts? Man, how barren she sits, Jerusalem. Jeremiah, the weeping prophet. We don't say much about that. But I think this is part of our instruction, is helping people learn about God-given emotions. Now, for me as a pastor, this is part of my preaching. I don't mean like a two-minute excerpt into, but I believe, I tend to be a very vulnerable preacher in my preaching. I'm speaking of as a pastor. In my preaching, I tend to be pretty vulnerable. So it would not be unusual if I read a text about the nearness of God for me to stop and say, oh, dear people, aren't you glad that God is near? Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad he's not a God who's far away? He draws near. Maybe today that is exactly what you need, is to know the nearness of God in whatever it is you're facing. I might do that before going on to verse 11, say, or whatever the text is to identify those moments of pastoral care and to make it a part of what we do together. So I'm a huge fan of this, not just as a seminar. And we're going to preach Psalms again this summer, 10 Psalms. We did it 5 years ago, did 10 Psalms. This summer, we're doing 10 more. And I pick them carefully to cover the full range of human emotion. And when it's time to lament, I'll be talking about what it means to lament, to lament in faith, but to lament. And we'll look at an example of that. Now, I want to take a moment on this next one, and give you some examples of this. I believe as ministry leaders, we should educate ourselves and the people we serve about how to help others grieve. And sometimes I get very specific about this, including things that are good to say and things that are less helpful to say. Okay? Now, because I'm talking about seasons of grief, preparing our people and so on, there have been times in our 40 years when there is a special season of grief. I mentioned the couple that leads our grief share ministry. Both of their spouses died within 6 months of each other, and they were part of our church, and they were those hub people. You know what I mean? Everybody knew Harry. Everybody knew Paula. Everybody. They were those people that talked to everybody and made dumb jokes, and that was Harry. Very dry sense of humor. Really dumb jokes all the time. But everybody knew Harry. He talked to everybody. And then stomach cancer. And wow, he was going to beat it, you know? Get some surgery and chemo and some stuff. And then it became clear he wasn't going to beat it. And then at the same time, Paula, she's been fighting cancer for 20 years, man. And every time, you know, I think I'm in remission, and she probably was. And then it was time. And so I remember hearing this, and with their permission, we had a Sunday morning conversation, and it went something like this. Before we come to the Word of God this morning, we need to talk. So just hear me. In this coming ministry year, you know, September to May, we are going to welcome in our church family several babies. You know who you are, but we've got some babies coming, and this is going to be a great season. And we're going to welcome those new babies, and we're going to celebrate and enjoy the new life. During this ministry year as well, we are going to walk two of our dear friends to the door. And we will. And I spelled out what that looked like. We will not be afraid to step near to Harry and Paula. We will not be afraid to take the meals. We will not be afraid to grieve. And grieve we will. But during this ministry year, it appears that both of their journeys on this earth will come to an end. So folks, let's make a commitment as a congregation, as a faith community, to walk this road really well with people we love. All right? Are we in on this? Yes! Okay, and off we go. Now, I remember when both of those dear friends died. Harry died on a Sunday. He died during they lived two blocks away, so word could come very quickly. I was finishing preaching second service, and we were singing Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone. And little did I know that as we were singing My Chains Are Gone, I've been set free, Harry was with the Lord. And so I'm sitting in the front, service is closing, and of course someone comes up and taps me on the shoulder and says, Harry's gone. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. So I got over there so fast. I got up and I said, folks, this is what we said. And today the Lord has welcomed Harry to his house. You'll excuse me if I don't greet you all, but I'm out and I'll be there with the family. So I was there very, very quickly. And I remember that how precious that time was with the extended family, all of whom I'd met in the weeks and months before. But I remember his wife, who's now the grief share leader, caring for me. We were fishing friends. We hung out. He wasn't just somebody who attended the church, though that's important too. We were friends. And so I was caring for people around the room. How are you? How are you? You know, oh, I'm so sorry. About your daddy? Yeah. And Paula came to me and said, try this on. Thank you so much for all you're doing for our family. This is so significant. Don't forget to grieve yourself. He was your friend. Oh, I said, Paula, why'd you say that? Come on, I'm working here. you're gonna crack the bubble. No, but I knew what she meant. And then the other gal who died, her name also was Paula, ironically. I was there with the family overnight. They asked me to be present because they knew death was coming soon. And I was there overnight. It was about 5 a.m. and it became very clear that death was going to be very soon. And I woke up her husband, who was just taking a nap, just so tired. And I said, I think it's time. And he came just as she took her last breath and her color drained. So this was a walk for our congregation. It was an important walk, to walk our friends to the door. Both of their funerals, very, very profoundly powerful. But that involved, as I'm saying here, about preparing your people. That was one example of preparing a congregation. This spring, March, I had 3 funerals back to back to back. Friday, Saturday, preached 3 services Sunday morning, and then another funeral. It's just the way it was. How do you think I felt on Monday? Oh, drained, baby. I'm exhausted, emotionally, physically, because in each case, you enter that world and you care. Now, about this, preparing people, I want to say a couple of things here as well. This is part of preparing people. I said a moment ago, preparing people for what to say and not. I have been very explicit about this up front in a pulpit, to say, because we're talking about grief in this situation, we just lost another dear friend in her 50s to cancer. Dear friend, oh, that hurt. But I've been very specific to our congregation. May I coach you here on things that are helpful to say and things that are unhelpful to say? On the unhelpful category would be things that you mean so well, but please don't say the following, okay? Please don't say, well, they're better off where they are. Don't you dare. Don't you say, well, you know, there's a verse in the Bible about that. It's Romans 8:28. You might not have ever heard it before, but it says all things work together for good, including all things like this. And or don't say to them, well, the Bible says to rejoice in everything. So how are you rejoicing in the death of? Don't do this. Don't ask intrusive questions, things that you have no business asking. Don't do that. So I had a pretty good list. Here are some other things I would suggest instead. And whether you can do this or not depends on your relationship with the family. It's never wrong to say, I'm so sorry for your loss. But if you say that, come on, would you mean it, please? I'm so sorry for your loss. I am. I will be praying for you in the weeks ahead, months ahead. Everybody says usually, and anything I can do to help, and really most people don't call. But there are ways to care and there are ways not to. So I try to be very specific about that. I wanted to say as well here, that this could involve acts of service or being quiet. And I realize I'm watching time, I really am. Under acts of service, you know, sometimes the most insignificant things communicate care in a lasting way. Quick story, when I was a youth pastor, I got one of those Saturday morning calls. Dad was killed. Mom and kids came to church. This dad didn't. Don't think he was a believer. He was on his way to go hunting. He drank too much beer and he ran off the road and hit a tree. That's what happened. Okay. So I got the call in the morning that this had happened. It took hours for somebody to find the car because it's the middle of the night. He was going out late and was supposed to be there for hunting in the morning. And so he didn't make it. And then you got a call and figure out, where do you go? I don't know. I thought he was coming. All of that. Well, two daughters. One was in our high school youth group. The other was pretty young, like, I'm going to say six. So I got to the house, cars everywhere, whole crowd of people caring for mom. Thought, this is good. Greeted her, expressed my concern. High school daughter. She's got a posse for little friends, crying together in a little huddle on the couch. And I went over and made my presence known and patted her on the shoulder and said, honey, I'm so sorry. And I looked around, and here, standing in the door of the kitchen, is a six-year-old. Just standing there. Well, she kind of knew me, sort of. And I went over and said, well, hi, honey. What are you doing? She said, I don't know. Just, you know. I said, well, have you had breakfast? She said, no. Everybody was busy. Except, I said, well, you know what? I bet you I can get you breakfast. What do you normally eat? So we're in the kitchen. Everybody's in the other room. I dug through the cupboards and got her, I think, with Cheerios or something like that. Got her milk, and we sat and just were together. We got done with that, and there was nothing for her to do. And I said, what, do you like to color? And she said, yeah. I said, do you have things to color with? She showed me where the crayons. We sat for, I think, an hour and drew pictures and talked. And some of them were teaching pictures. She kind of knew something terrible happened. Can you draw me a picture of your family? Tell me about everybody. She was just helping a six-year-old think. Okay. Fast forward, funeral, years, and so on. Years later, we were moving from that church to another. And that little girl had grown up, and I had some contact with her. I knew who she was and so on. But we're part of a big church. And there was going to be a goodbye thing, you know, reception, hundreds of people. Anyway, people coming. And somebody was driving her to it. And I heard about it from that person. An adult was driving her to the reception thing for us. And she said, so do you know who Pastor Jay is? Here's her answer. Yes, he's the man who colored with me the day my daddy died. Wow. I mean, you kind of half forget. But for her, she'll never forget. And I thought, oh, Lord, thank you for that privilege to color with a little girl the day her daddy died. So I'm saying acts of service. Sometimes it means feeding Cheerios to a little girl, little boy. Sometimes even being quiet. I hope you know the value of quiet. A quote that I can't say correctly because I forget. It's in one of my books on grief, of which I have many, where it might have been C.S. Lewis who said something like this. One came to comfort me. He talked incessantly. He quoted scripture. He stayed way too long, and then he left. I was glad to see him go. Another came and sat with me and was quiet, asked a few questions, prayed with me simply, and left. I was sad to see him go. Sometimes being present means just tone it down a bit. Sometimes just being quiet. Thank you. Yeah. I want to go back. I'm sorry here. There's one other thing I know I want to say. I wanted to say something on this. Did we look at this picture? I'm not sure. I've got to say this. One of the other things that I do as a pastor, and anybody in a counseling or caring role can do this. And I learned this some years ago. When I'm involved in a family where there is expected death, okay, cancer, older age, something, I very purposefully ask if I can be a part of that journey. And that involves not only thinking ahead about funerals and so on, but it involves caring for the person who's dying and talking to them about death very directly. How do you feel about that? Are you scared to die? And say it. Say it. They're thinking it. So I think it's okay to assuming you've got any kind of relationship, I do it about any time, but in a caring way, I want to talk about death. What is that like? What do you think? And so I want to know where they're at with the Lord, certainly. That's part of this. I also talk to the family. If you're going to be attending to this loved one, have you been through this before? Let's talk about, make sure you have pain management. Is hospice involved? Does your doctor know where you're at? I talk about making sure about pain management. I give them my knowledge about caring for their loved one. Things to expect, the kinds of care that's needed, how long this may last, some of you know what I'm talking about, what active death looks like. Not everyone knows. Here's what your loved one will need during that time. And let's talk about the moment of death. Would you, if you know, we don't know how that's going to go. Do you plan to be present? Who's okay with that? I'll ask the person dying. How is that for you? Are there people you'd like present? Talk about it, folks. And I address what happens to a body after death occurs. And if you don't know, you should ask. You should educate yourself about this so that you can care for others. Bodies do funny things after they're dead. And you might burp and pass gas and a variety of other things. And if you don't know that, this is very disturbing. And so you care for someone by telling them the truth. And if there's jewelry to be removed, have you ever been present when someone comes to care for a loved one, I'll say it, and to take them into their care, pick up the body in colloquial language? Let me talk to you about what that's like. Because a body bag and a gloved up person may look very sterile, but there are health requirements that I like to help people learn about. So anyway, I think that's part of this. And boy, I just think educate yourself. Using seasons of grief and loss for gospel good. Oh my goodness. Yes. Yes. You represent Christ in that moment. Compassion, emotion, entering into grief, knowing what's needed and taking care of it. Reminding grieving people of the nearness of God. If you're attending the death, an expected death, let me tell you, the person dying is also grieving. Okay? It's not just the people who are staying. The person dying is grieving. So you need to care for their soul in the meantime. Yeah. Wow. The nearness of God. That also means not trying to answer all the questions. Why would God do this? My most typical answer is, you know, I don't understand the purpose of God. I don't. But I know he is near you today. Because even if you wanted to know why? I've got three answers. Sometimes it's so that you'll comfort others, but just don't. Right? Very unhelpful. My pastor said there's three reasons why this happens. No, I don't know today. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Push them, turn them toward Jesus. I often say to people, that's as simple as orienting your feet toward him. Turn toward him. Turn toward him. Learn how to lament. But here are things I think you should do. Practical suggestions. I think you should do these things. Well, more stories could be told. Yeah, those are some things right there. Here are some of my books on death and dying. I have a big section. I'm a reader, I'm a student, and I've learned the value of preparing my own self, my own heart, to grieve well. And here are some of the ones, just some, that I think are so good. Dark Clouds, Tender Mercy, Discovering the Grace of Lament, wonderful book about helping people grieve and using scripture to do it. I thought that was outstanding. The Art of Dying by Rob Mohl, who interestingly wrote that book when he was young, and just a few years ago in my state, died in a mountain climbing accident and left his wife and several children still in the home. Not on purpose, obviously, but he fell to his death. And I saw it in the newspaper. Rob Mohl, I know that guy. He wrote The Art of Dying. He just did. Wow. Pretty good book discussing death and dying and how we interact with it. Well, I think those are all would be helpful reads for you.